That's good. So, I'm going to be talking about psychotomic orthomorphisms and character sums. So, I'm going to start out by talking about character sums, and then I'm going to introduce these orthomorphisms, and we'll get nice upper bounds on these character sums by using these orthomorphisms. I'll give definitions. Okay, so we define a recurrent sequence. We have a finite abelian group G, of order at least 2, and for some element in this group, we define a recurrent sequence by applying a permutation of the group over and over to some element, and we call that psi. And we'd like to find non-trivial upper bounds for the incomplete character sum. Like, we take a character of the group, and then we sum over the first n elements in the sequence, and we want to find non-trivial upper bounds for this sum. A character of a group is just a homomorphism from the group to the complex, to the multiplicative group of the complex numbers, and it's trivial that a character of an element in a group is just a root of unity. Yeah, and if psi is a special type of permutation called an R orthomorphism, like an orthomorphism, what we'll get to it, is just a permutation with some extra requirements. So if psi is this type of permutation called an R orthomorphism, in particular of the additive group of FQ, we can significantly improve the upper bounds that we get for the character sum. So just some applications. I don't know too much about applications of character sums, but I guess they're used in pseudo-random number generation and cryptography. Orthomorphisms, I know more about. They have lots of nice applications in projective planes, because you can define an orthomorphism graph where of a group, and two orthomorphisms are adjacent. I'll define orthomorphism now. A permutation F of a group, an additive group, is an orthomorphism if fx minus x, the function fx minus x, is also a permutation. It doesn't have anything to do with homomorphism. It's just what they, it's just the name. Yes, so just again, an orthomorphism is a permutation F such that fx minus x is also a permutation. It turns out, and two of them are adjacent if one minus the other is also a permutation. So, like, for example, if I have Z7, let's say, fx equals 3x, gx equals 6x, both of these, if I'm looking at, both of these are permutations of this additive group. They're orthomorphisms in particular, because 6x, that linear polynomial is a permutation, and 6x minus x is 5x, which is also a permutation, so g is an orthomorphism, and f, 3x, that's a permutation, 3x minus x is 2x, also permutation, so they're both orthomorphisms, and gx minus fx is 3x, which is a permutation, so they're adjacent. So it turns out that a set of n mutually adjacent orthomorphisms is equivalent to n plus 1 mutually orthogonal Latin squares, n by n Latin squares, and so the application to projective planes is if we have n minus 2 mutually adjacent orthomorphisms, they exist, if and only if there exists a projective plane of order n. And that was one of the motivations for studying these graphs, trying to find cliques in them to get projective planes. And there's interesting things you can say about the graphs, like if such and such a clique, like if we have two cliques, we can find like we can prove things about, like, if a non-Disargian plane of prime order existed, it would have to have no translations, or things like that. And the orthomorphisms also have applications in block ciphers, atomic Latin squares, and Rim squares. The last part here, that's not right. Orthomorphisms do, however, have applications in things called Latin power sets. Let me double check. Yeah, but I don't know too much about those. Okay, so now we'll get into the sequence. So if G is a finite abelian group of order M, size of permutation, we define our sequence. Makes sense. The sequence obviously has least period less than or equal to m, because the period of it will just be equal to the length of the cycle of the permutation that the starting element is in. So for a non-trivial character, i.e. something that's not just one at everything, we want to give non-trivial upper bounds for the character sum. So we're summing the character of the first n elements of the group. So here's sort of the meat and potatoes. So if R is a positive integer, we define the complete character sum like that. Complete just means we're taking all the group elements. Then for a set of non-empty set of integers, k, finite, we define ARK is this. It's just all the combinations inside K whose difference is equal to R. And if R is big enough, well, you can't get a difference which is equal to R. So for sufficiently large R, that's zero. And we set K to be the cardinality of script K. And then we have this interesting theorem from Cohen, Niederreiter, Sperlinski, and Ziv. I'll go through this carefully because it might seem kind of weird at first. These might seem like they come out of nowhere. So if G is a finite abelian group of order bigger than or equal to 2, and UN is defined by applying this permutation psi over and over, for any non-trivial character chi of G and any finite non-empty set K of integers, we have this upper bound holds. So I'll go through it sort of quickly. The idea is if we set S to be equal to n equals 0, n minus 1 chi un, then thanks. Then S minus, oh, that's not what we wanted. We want this to be the complete character sum. Oh no, that is what we wanted, sorry. Then we can show that this inequality holds. Oh no, that's not it. That for any shift, so we can show that for if we shift it is upper bounded by this, and that means that S, that the size of S, like the absolute value, is less than or equal to. And that's for any integer k. And then what we do is we sum this for all the, we add all these inequalities up for all the k in our big set k. So this thing here turns into this part here, like with some extra stuff. And this part here, okay, and then for this part, it sort of gets, it breaks into two things. It breaks into this and this, and the rest basically just uses the Cauchy-Schwarz inequality and the triangle inequality and a bunch of manipulation. But it makes a lot of sense. That's good. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, just going back to it. The only time where it matters what's in the set K is in this term here. Like this, if fixed with a fixed size for big K, the only time like it comes into the picture. Well, and. No, it doesn't matter, just here. So what we want to do is we want to sort of fix this like center k around zero to get the absolute values of the stuff in it down. So that's what we do. And by doing that, the last term, like this whole thing here, just turns into k over 2. So now here's where the R orthomorphisms will come in. So if chi is a non-trivial character of G, since it's non-trivial, there has to be some beta in G, where chi at beta is not 1. So then you just do this. These two sums have to be the same. So either they're zero or they're not. If they're not zero, you cancel and a contradiction, so they have to be zero. So that's just showing that if you sum a character over all the things in the group, you get zero. Look at how we defined SR. So if for all the R's at which this thing here is non-zero, like, if at all, for all these r's where this is non-zero, if psi to the r were a permutation, then that thing up here would be zero. Does that make sense? Because if you're permuting all the things in the group, we know that if we sum the character over all the group, we get zero. So if it's a permutation, we're summing over the entire group. So that's what we want. We want to pick our psi such that for psi to the r for all the right r's is a permutation. So okay, we define an orthomorphism if script r is a finite non-empty set of positive integers. If for all r in our big script r, f to the r under composition is an orthomorphism, then it's called an R orthomorphism. So if for all if for R equal to this, if psi were an R orthomorphism, then that complete character sum would vanish when you take it like at the R's in that thing. So we can significantly improve the theorem in that case with this corollary. The setup is all the same, except we require that psi be an R orthomorphism for these integers, and then we get this nice upper bound. I'm just giving this upper bound. I'm not really going to get into it, but it's sometimes better than the last one. Okay, so here's where I'll get into the cyclotomic part. So this is a construction for our orthomorphisms using psychotonic mappings. So if gamma is a primitive element in FQ, we take and n's a divisor of q minus 1, a positive divisor, then we take all the nth powers of gamma. It's easy to show that that's a multiplicative subgroup. And then we just take the cosets of that, and they're called the psychotomic cosets, and they partition a multiplicative group. And then we can define a mapping. So each one of these A's corresponds to one of the cosets, and we say, if you're in the ice coset, we'll multiply you by AI. And it's just like a nice way to make permutations. So that makes sense. So, and then we have this result. If Q is a prime power, N's a divisor of Q minus 1, and T is a non-zero element, and R is any set of positive integers of size bigger than or equal to 1, if this inequality here holds, then there's some B that's not 0 and not minus T, such that this is an R orthomorphism of FQ. So what this does is it says, okay, if you're in the first psychotomic coset, this function multiplies you by this value. Otherwise, we multiply you by this value. And it turns out that that will be an R orthomorphism. And then just this is another construction. If Q is a power of a prime and Q is bigger than 3, and psi is an, so over the prime subfield, it's an FP linear mapping. If the characteristic polynomial of psi is a primitive polynomial, then psi will be an R orthomorphism for that set there. Yeah, and that's the ad for the discrete math day. I'll stop here. It's there. Actually, I'll just take a second. I'll just mention some other interesting problems. What I'm working on right now is how to generalize these psychotonic orthomorphisms not to finite fields.